different problems that arise in network communications.
Yeah.
What is yours?
Okay. So what I'm going to talk about is, well, the flavor of the talk is going to be something along the lines of semi-definite relaxation in action. And we have this semi-definite relaxation being an optimization tool, and what we're going to try and do is to see whether we can build a competitive detector for or decoder for a communication system based on this, the notion of semi-definite relaxation. So this is work that I did with my student Mehran Naqvi. And around the same time, Tom Luo and one of his students also decided that this might be a good idea. And since we discovered that we were doing the same thing, we have since worked together on this. So just to try to put the, get things started, I'll try and provide a little bit of the communications context in terms of trying to work out why this might be an interesting problem to solve. And then it will take us down to about here, this one. So when you see this part here highlighted, this will be where we start to talk about new stuff. The material up until that is a bit of tutorial as to how things in wireless communications work. So what we're looking at in a sort of a classical wireless communication setup, a transmitter and a receiver with a single antenna each. And in the case where we're transmitting a narrowband signal, the received signal is just a scalar multiplied by the transmitted signal plus some noise. And if we assume that this channel is known at the receiver but it's not known at the transmitter, if the environment contains a lot of scatterers, as a lot of wireless communication environments do, then the rate at which we can achieve communicate from the transmitter to receiver grows like the logarithm of the SNR. And the if we decide to communicate at a particular rate, then the probability that we are unable to communicate at that particular rate decays like 1 over the SNR. Now, in the, I guess it was the middle of the earlier mid-90s, people started to investigate, so what would happen is if rather than having a single transmit antenna, we had multiple transmit antennas and multiple antennas at the receiver. Again, we look at a simple narrowband case so that the received signal at this time is now a matrix H times a vector of symbols plus noise. Again, we look at a coherent reception model. And the interesting thing here now is that under these sort of idealized environments, this bounds on the rates that can be achieved now grow with logarithm of SNR, but with a multiplying factor in front. Okay? And the probability that we're unable to communicate at a chosen rate now goes down not as 1 over SNR, but goes down much faster than that. Okay, or can go down much faster than that. In fact, there's a trade-off between these two. And you know, these are nice, really attractive results. Okay, just by supplying individual antennas, we have a multiplying effect on the rate that can be achieved. Or we can have an exponential effect on the probability that we're unable to communicate. Okay, so these are nice in theory, but measurements have confirmed that this is actually viable in practice. If you were to put between 4 and 16 antennas on the back of a laptop and drive it around Manhattan, when Manhattan there'd be plenty of scatterers around, then with reasonable reliability you can achieve the rates that the channel has the potential to provide this kind of performance. Okay, so there's real benefits to being able to take advantage of the presence of multiple antennas. But this is a double-edged sword because we have multiple transmit antennas that are sending symbols at the same time, and these things interfere with each other. So although we have these benefits on tap, then the problem of the receiver is now we have not only interference from others, but interference from ourselves. Okay, and so a question in the development of these systems that has been around for a long time is how can we trade the benefits that we have, or the potential benefits of these systems, against the complexity of building this receiver, or computational complexity of running this receiver. Okay, let's say, I mean, this has been an active area both of sort of academic research and industrial development for around 10 years. So this idea is not new, okay? But this observation is a little bit different, is that in a very simple setting, this problem of building the receiver boils down to a Boolean quadratic problem. So an optimization problem with a quadratic cost and binary or 0, 1 or plus or minus one type variables. And a standard approach for looking at problems such as this is to employ a technique known as semi-definite relaxation, which relaxes this problem to a convex optimization problem and then generates candidate solutions. And this is interesting because semi-definite relaxation has some significantly different computational properties from those of the other techniques that have been proposed for attacking this kind of problem. Okay, and this is something that Balderstein Grimson, who was a postdoc at McMaster, observed. Unfortunately, the technique that he developed is actually not competitive computationally in conventional settings. It's just too expensive. The existing techniques are much cheaper and provide essentially the same performance. So the question that we asked ourselves, are there other ways to leverage this notion of semi-definite relaxation to develop a competitive receiver? And that's really what our adventures in trying to do that are going to be the topic of my talk today. So the focus is really on the idea, so we're going to try and think of the simplest setting that we possibly can. Okay, and in this case, we have a vector of received signals here, which is a matrix which represents the operation of the channel times the vector S of transmitted symbols plus some additive noise, which is going to be assumed to be white and Gaussian. And we'll look at one of the simpler cases where the possible symbols that can be transmitted are plus or minus 1 or plus or minus J, where J is the complex unit. Okay, so this is something that we call quadrature phase shift keying or 4QAM signaling. And there are obvious weaknesses in the attention of this for those of you who have a communications background, and I'll talk about those a little bit later. So having sort of set this up, I'll first look at a somewhat naive approach to trying to build these receiver structures that involve trying to make decisions on the actual symbols that are sent. And then I'll look at something a little bit more sophisticated, which is about trying to assess the reliability of those decisions. We'll look at the notion of semi-definite relaxation, then we'll try to implement this in practice and see how things are going. So in terms of hard demodulation, here's one way we could build a system for trying to provide good performance in this context. We have a source which we use apply to a channel encoder. This produces a binary encoded binary code word that represents blocks of the source. This is interleaved and then transmitted over this channel. And the demodulator here tries to determine which of the symbols were transmitted. Okay, that information is sent back through the deinterleaver, which inverts this guy, and an outer decoder which takes binary decisions here and tries to determine which of the code words that were sent. Okay, so if we have this simplified signaling scheme here, then this is the device that we are going to focus on. Okay, this is a very standard communication structure. There are very standard choices that can be made here. There's standard choices that we can be made for this. And we're going to try and focus on the operation of this element. Okay, so the idea of the hard demodulator is in this simple setting that we have, we want to try to find the vector of bits that is the minimum distance away from the distance between the measured signal and some synthesized noise-free synthesized version of the transmitted signal. Okay, I'm guessing here I really should have used this parameterization for S here. I'm sorry for missing that. Unfortunately, there are m binary two to the m two m binary variables here. So this is really just an evaluation type problem. And the goal of designing this element in this kind of a system is to try to find a good approximation to this solution at reasonable computational cost. Okay? And there's a number of established ways of doing this. Okay? Regularized inversion of H and then decisions on each element. Taking a QR decomposition of H and getting a triangular matrix R here and then making decisions sequentially from starting from the bottom. There's a notion of sphere decoding, which is something that I will talk about quite a lot, is to observe that if this is triangularized here, this in fact imposes a tree structure. Okay, so we can actually look, so this optimization problem can be represented as a search on a tree. Okay, so you can do your favorite kind of tree search. Okay, this is optimal in the sense that we can find the optimal solution, but even in an average setting, this is still remains a hard problem. But one of the advantages of viewing the problem in this way is you can adopt a variety of termination criteria for stopping the search in the tree that yield suboptimal variants of this approach that have good trade-offs between performance and complexity. And what you do if you attack this problem by semi-definite relaxation is you take this quadratic function here and you rewrite it as a homogeneous quadratic and then apply standard semi-definite relaxation techniques to this guy. And I'll talk about what those techniques are in a little bit. In terms of how these things work, this linear approach is computationally very cheap but performs poorly when the H is ill-conditioned. And in wireless communication channels, the probability of an ill-conditioned H is not negligible. If you use decision feedback, your performance is usually better, but there's problems that still remain on these ill-conditioned channels. If you look at this tree search approach, there's a fairly the computational cost of finding the optimal node in the tree is a random variable. There's actually, that is dependent on the channel H, and there's actually a fairly heavy tail in the distribution of the complexity. Okay? The average complexity is pretty good for reasonable SNRs, but this heavy tail can be an issue to deal with. And early termination algorithms do help in that case. In comparison, semi-definite relaxation provides good performance. It's a polynomial time algorithm. However, the bulk of the complexity distribution of this tree search approach lies below the complexity of a semi-definite relaxation approach. Okay? So in this case, the computational cost is almost deterministic. Okay? And so, whereas in this case, the distribution has significant width. And unfortunately, the computational cost of this one is the bulk of the distribution of this guy lies below the computational cost of this one. Okay, so it's really it's the impact of this heavy tail that is one of the trade-offs in this tree search decoding approach. Okay, having said all of that, there are some major weaknesses. I'm going to go back to this guy now, to this model. Okay? And there are some major reasons why we should not attempt to build, or why, that's not the way I want to say this. There are some major weaknesses that I have glossed over in this model for building a communication system. And one of the major weaknesses is this point. Okay? Here, we are trying to estimate directly the bits that were transmitted here. And we're making a hard decision of those. Those bits are, we'll say, 1 or minus 1. And we're making a hard decision on those. However, if you are only 51% sure that your decision is correct, there's no way to communicate that uncertainty to the decoding unit. Okay, so there's a fundamental loss of information by making binary decisions here so early in the game. Okay, so the standard approach for trying to improve things here is to observe that perhaps it would be better to transmit, extract reliability information from the channel rather than a hard estimate. Okay, and this suggests this is a notion known as a soft demodulation. And we can, if we have some prior information as to exactly what those bits might be, then that can have also be incorporated into this notion of reliability. The reason why I went on the diversion to the previous simplified case is that many of the approaches to extracting this reliability of the information exploit aspects of the hard demodulation problem. Okay, so now I want to look at this notion of soft demodulation. Okay, and so if we're going to build a more effective communication system, okay, we can leave the upper part the same as it was before. We have a binary outer encoder here, the same interleaver, and we're going to take these bits, turn them into symbols, and transmit them across the air. The difference here is we're going to put something different into this red box here. So now, rather than having this box try to determine the bits that were transmitted, what we're going to try get this guy to do is to calculate the likelihoods of each of the bits. And we're going to send those likelihoods to a decoding device that doesn't accept binary decisions, but accepts likelihoods. It takes the likelihoods from individual bits, puts them together, and then outputs likelihoods for the bits as a function of the output of the code word. So here we are exploiting the correlation information provided by the code. And then what we might even do is we might feed that information back here, because this will give us some a priori information as to what these bits might have been. And then we can use that information to refine the likelihoods that we extract from the channel and run this so-called turbo loop. So it's like a turbo in a car. The analogy is with the turbo in the car. These things sort of bootstrap each other themselves or reinforce themselves here. We run this loop until we are happy with the outcome. And right out here is where we make the hard decision, rather than at this point in the loop. Again, this is not a novel idea. This is a very standard one in the communications protocol. But you can see that by preserving reliability information for longer in the loop and waiting till right out here to make a hard decision, we're preserving information in the loop, and the expectation is that we can perform better. Okay, so the goal of this guy is to calculate the likelihoods of the bits that were transmitted. So what do those likelihoods look like? Well, actually, the simple way to do that is to look at the likelihood ratio, which is the ratio that the probability that a given bit is one, given the particular measurement, divided by the probability that given bit is minus one, given the measurement. Okay, and so if this number is large and positive, okay, if this number is large, then we are large and positive, because this is the log. If this is large and positive, we're fairly sure this is a one. If it's large and negative, then we're fairly sure it's a minus one. Okay. But this information is difficult to extract, so we apply Bayes' theorem and sum up over all the bit vectors where the ith element is a 1 of the likelihood times the prior information of that particular bit. Okay, so this is the thing that we are asking that soft demodulator to compute. Okay, and if you have a vector of plus or minus 1, and you ask yourself how many elements are there where the first element is one, well, it's clearly exponential in the remaining length of the bits. So there's an exponential number of terms in these sums. So we really are pushing it uphill right now. Okay, we can simplify these things a little bit because of we can compute these probabilities in the case of the Gaussian noise environment, and you can see the hard decision metric reappears here. Okay, and we also have prior information here. okay? And under some nice conditions, okay, it's fairly easy to compute this prior information, so I'm not going to focus too hard on how we compute this additional term. Okay, so we still have to compute this guy. And there are still an exponential number of terms in this sum and an exponential number of terms in that sum. So we're still in trouble. Okay? But what we can do is we can identify, because of the sum of exponentials, if we have a sum of exponentials, the term which is the largest of those exponentials is going to dominate. Okay? So if you think about all the possible values that these guys can take on, well, in this case, it's actually the minimum of these ones which dominates. Okay? And so we can actually reduce this or approximate this term as the difference between finding the minimum of this problem, a minimum of this term, and the minimum of this term. So this is a very standard approximation in the literature. Okay, it performs pretty well most of the time. But we take this ratio of exponential number of sums and we turn this into a difference between the outcomes of two optimization problems. And these two optimization problems are exactly analogous to the hard decision problems that we had before, where we are actually looking for the minimum value of a quadratic function over a set of binary vectors. Okay? So although we have simplified these things, each of these two problems is still hard. But we've talked a little bit about how we might approach this. We could use some tree search ideas, or we could use semi-definite relaxation ideas. And both of these things are valid. They have different complexity characteristics. But in their raw form, they're still quite expensive. Okay? In particular, you have these two problems to solve, and you have to solve a large number of them. So for each element in the bit vector, you have to solve these two problems. Okay? And there have been some attempts to try and simplify things, but this is still pretty hard work. So people have looked for alternative ways to try to approximate this cost. Okay, and we're almost in the position now where we're going to see the role that the novelty in what I'm doing here. So here's the thing we want to approximate again. So what I'm going to do now is I'm not going to take these sums over the whole list of all possibilities. I'm going to try to identify a smaller list of possibilities that I think probably contains the dominant terms. Okay? And so rather than taking this sum over all of them, I'm going to take this sum over a smaller number of them. Hopefully a much smaller number. Okay? And then I'm going to use that list to compute, to approximate these likelihoods rather than doing it over the whole list. Okay, and then I'm going to have to modify this likelihood a little bit to account for the fact that I actually might miss some terms here. And I'm going to clip these off so that they are going to be maximum and minimum values that this can take on. Again, there have been several tree search-based approaches to taking this problem on. Okay, to try to identify a good list of candidates by searching through a tree and looking at the leaf nodes that you come to first, as a collection of those. Okay? But is there a way to do this using semi-definite relaxation? Okay? This tree search approach has all the disadvantages of the previous tree search cases. Heavy tail in the complexity distribution that can make it hard to provision processes to be able to do this thing in reasonable time. Okay? The semi-definite relaxation has the potential to be able to do this in polynomial time with a fairly well-controlled complexity distribution that may make it easier for us to do this. Okay? The problem is that this is serious competition. These are some fairly well-tuned algorithms that have been tuned up over a period of 6, 7, 8 years. Okay? So are we really able to build a serious competitor based on, you know, the semi-definite relaxation context? Okay? And this is what we are going to talk about in the talk. At first, I'd better tell you a little bit about what semi-definite relaxation is, okay, just so that we have this in mind, and then we'll get onto something that's interesting. Okay, so the cost that we are trying to minimize here consists of a distance term, which is a term that's appeared in several of the slides here, plus some prior information from previous rounds of decoding. In a mathematical sense, essentially the important thing is that we can write this as a homogeneous quadratic, okay, where these elements of this vector b tilde here are plus or minus 1. Okay, so minimizing or maximizing this thing, you know, we're just out of luck. It's a Boolean quadratic optimization problem with binary variables. You know, nothing that you can do to solve that optimally. However, semi-definite relaxation has been identified as a technique which will generate good solutions in polynomial time. Okay, and what's more interesting is that there is some work that using a randomization technique, you can take the solution of this convex semi-definite program and use it to randomly generate binary vectors. And if you pick the best of those randomly generated binary vectors, you actually get a pretty good solution to the original problem. In fact, independent of the dimension of the problem, you're within a constant factor of the optimal solution. Okay? So this is not just, you know, a kind of an approximation. This is actually a good approximation. Okay, and this has been, these techniques have been used in communications and other engineering applications, and I just will make a plug for Tom Lewell's tutorial paper here as a wonderful way to break into this if you're interested in the idea. So what is the trick? How can you turn a Boolean quadratic problem into a convex one? Okay. Well, here's the game. Rather than taking this quadratic term here, find a matrix which is the outer product of those vectors, and this objective here is just the trace of this guy. Okay. This matrix here is a rank one matrix, and it has a positive eigenvalue. So it's semi-definite. If you look at the diagonal matrix entries of this matrix, okay, remember that the each element of B tilde is plus or minus 1, so the diagonal entries are 1. And the rank of this matrix is 1 because this is how we constructed it. Okay, so this problem here is entirely equivalent to this one. Okay, the difficulty of solving this problem manifests itself in the Boolean variables. The difficulty of solving this one manifests itself in the rank constraint. Everything else is real valued and nice. Everything else is convex. Okay, so the idea of semi-definite relaxation is we have moved the position of the difficulty from binary variables to a rank constraint. So now let's get rid of the hard bit. Just drop the rank constraint. And if you throw away this rank constraint, what you are left with is minimizing a linear function of x subject to linear constraints and the fact that x is positive semi-definite. And this is a convex optimization problem, and it's a class of semi-definite programs, and most importantly for this talk, okay, it's a particular class of semi-definite programs that can be efficiently solved. In the general case, semi-definite programs will cost you something to the order of 6.5. It is critical in this application that this particular STP is solvable in this kind of order. Okay, otherwise we are just blown out of the water by the competition. Okay, but the problem is that the solution to this problem is a matrix. We want a solution which is a binary vector. That's what we wanted to this guy. The solution to this guy is a binary vector. Okay, and the observations that are the innovations in this talk come from thinking about how you go back from the solution of this from this matrix solution to this optimization problem to a binary vector. Okay, and the way that's done is by factorizing this semi-definite matrix in its two Cholesky factors, and generating some random vectors u that are uniformly distributed on the unit circle, and computing this candidate, which is just the sign of those, the plus of sign, element-wise sign of this product. Okay? And you rearrange the elements a little bit, okay, and then you repeat. And you continue to generate candidates randomly like this, and you pick the best one. Okay? So how good is that? Well, what you can actually do is you can ask yourself, how good on average is that? Okay? So you can actually, because this guy is uniformly distributed on the unit sphere, you can actually calculate the expected value. And you can actually calculate the expected value of the objective that we want to optimize. Okay? And the neat result from Gomans and Williamson, and sort of more specifically in our case from Nesterov, is that even in the worst case, the expected value of this cost over these randomizations is 4 over 7 of the way from the worst solution to the best solution. You might not think that's very, you know, we're kind of a little bit to one side of the middle between the worst and the best. But this is true even in the worst case. And better than that, that's the performance of the expected value. And if you have random independent trials and you keep doing them, the likelihood is that the best of those solutions that you randomly generate will be better than the expected value. I mean, the probability that random independent trials fall below the expected value over a long period of time, you know, a repeated number of trials, that decays away exponentially. Okay? So this is the performance on average. Okay? And we know that with high probability, we're going to beat the average by independent random trials. And, you know, this is as bad off as we can be. So the important solution, the important insight here from this idea is that some of the random vectors that are generated by this randomization process are good in terms of the objective. Okay, and this good is actually seriously quantified here. But in terms of what I want to do, this is the insight. Okay? But we want to find good vectors, right? The whole idea of building this list approximation was we wanted to be able to find good vectors. Okay? And we wanted to be able to find those efficiently. And here, this is suggesting that if we follow this procedure, solve a semi-definite program, which we can do efficiently, and then randomly generate things like this, some of the ones we generate are going to be good. So this suggests that maybe we should use this randomization procedure to generate the list. And essentially that's the insight, that's the key insight in the different perspective that we have taken on this problem from those that are in the existing problem. So finally, something new. Okay, here's the architecture that we've talked about that's well established. Our focus again is on the operation of this first element in the receiver block. Okay, and our goal is to use these measurements to identify the bit vectors for which this cost is small. And the insight is that from the analysis of the randomization procedure is that some of the vectors generated there have small values. Okay, so here's how we might do this. Okay, here's a naive, now that we've got this insight, here's a naive way to do this. Okay, we first compute this the kernel of the quadratic function that we're trying to optimize, and we solve the semi-definite program. We run the randomization procedure and we store all the vectors that we generate randomly in this way in our preliminary list. And we might want to enrich that list a little bit by looking at some of the neighbors to the points in this list, because this helps us overcome some of the inherent problems in the list approximation. Okay, and then use this list approximation to approximate the likelihood ratio. Sounds like a good idea. Okay? And what this means is that each time we go around the loop of the receiver structure, we only have to solve one semi-definite program. And we know we can solve that in a little bit more than cubic time. The previous approaches that have tried to do this using semi-definite programming have to solve 2 to the m plus 1. So m is the number of symbols that we send. 2 m plus 1 semi-definite programs. So we've reduced this by a fairly large factor. Okay? The computational cost of what we're doing is polynomial in the worst case. In worst case computational cost, all those things based on tree structure are not. So, you know, at the very least, this has different computational properties from existing strategies. And the SDP is a special one that only requires approximately cubic cost, and the randomization cost is only square in the number of points to generate. Looking really good, but it's not. Everything looks good, right? We have a polynomial time algorithm. The other algorithm is exponential. Everything looked good, but it can't compete. Okay? And the problem is that the typical implementation that we talk about, you know, is building with numbers of antennas. We can only build 4, 6, 8 antennas. I mean, if you go to Future Shop, you can buy a device which has for your home network that has 6 or 8 antennas in it. But you can't buy one that has 100 or 1,000. So maybe the guidance of this big O stuff is not really what we want here, that the constants are really impacting us here. Okay? So we need to do something better. And the question is, what can we do? Seems like we've exhausted the possibilities here. We've just taken the standard in a plain vanilla semi-definite relaxation hammer, and we've banged our communication problem, and it hasn't worked. It hasn't been competitive. Okay? The problem is that what we have is each time we go around the receiver loop, we have to solve an SDP. We'd like to try to approximate things somewhere along the line, so we only have to solve one SDP for each vector we try to identify. Okay, it's the repeated solution of the SDPs that are the bottleneck here. Okay, and we're also going to ask ourselves, how accurately do we need to solve the SDP? After all, we're only using the SDP as a way to work out where to randomly search for something else. So if we don't solve the SDP completely accurately, are we still somehow searching in a region that's interesting? Maybe that's going to be good enough. Again, the idea here is that the intuition from asymptotics, computational asymptotics, is not good enough for sort of the sorts of instances we come across. So what's the game we're going to play here? So we're using this randomization idea to generate a list, and then we are approximating the log likelihood ratio. So let's see if we can go back to the randomization procedure and see what we do. Okay, we generate each element of a vector by looking at a multiplying term, which is not that interesting, but looking at the sign of a linear combination of elements of a vector u, and the vector u is uniformly distributed on the unit sphere. Okay, so it's fairly clear, because each one of the elements of X depends on a different linear combination of the same random vector U, these elements are correlated. Okay? And we can also calculate their expected value. But these elements of X are binary, and we know their expected value. The problem is that they're correlated. So why don't we just ignore the correlation? And we're doing some kind of random search. You know, we've suggested from semi-definite relaxation we should do some kind of correlated random search. But we can analytically find the mean. We can find the mean of this. This V is the Cholesky factor, the columns of the Cholesky factor of the solution of the SDP. So we have access to these guys once we've solved the SDP. Okay? We're searching around for elements why don't we make that search a little bit less targeted by approximating this correlated randomization procedure by one in which we do independent Bernoulli randomization on each element, where the mean of that Bernoulli is given by the actual mean. So all we're doing is we're ignoring the correlation between elements, but we're retaining the first order statistics. Unfortunately, all Nesterov's lovely work on performance guarantees is now out the window. Okay? But this is much simpler. And it does open the door to reducing the cost. Okay? And the way this helps to reduce the cost is to identify that the information from the channel and the prior information which is available are intrinsically independent. Okay? And so we can use one SDP, one semi-definite program, to generate these Bernoulli random variables. And then when it comes to subsequent demodulations, we adjust the likelihood ratio of the mean of the Bernoulli random variables by taking the mean that we get from the channel and adding to that the mean that we get from the prior information. So this is the one that has come from the output of a semi-definite program. This is what comes from information from channel decoding, and this enables us to reduce the number of semi-definite programs that we have to one per channel use rather than one every time we attempt decoding. So how does this help us? Well, I said to you that the information from computational asymptotics was not helpful. And that statement probably remains true. Okay? But I think it's at least interesting to observe this as we go forward. So in the previous attempt to do semi-definite relaxation in this kind of context, we needed to solve 2m+1 semi-definite programs each time the receiver iterated. So the dominant computational cost of this depends on the length of the vector to the length of the, or the number of bits to the power of 4.5. Okay, approximately quartic. In our naive attempt to get this going, we got things with using the regular randomization procedure. We got things down to one semi-definite program per iteration. Okay, and so if you do p iterations, each one of the semi-definite programs costs you this amount. Okay, so we have been able to reduce this by an order. And using this Bernoulli randomization idea, we've been able to get rid of this p factor, the number of iterative cycles that we do, and we've been able to reduce the dominant cost here. To compare this to the dominant cost of the competition, the tree-based approaches are not polynomial bounded, but at moderate SNRs, you know, on average, it looks a bit like this. So in terms of big O, we're doing a bit better there. Something that's a bit, another existing competitor, again, has a similar kind of structure, and this one is deterministic. So this one sort of, this is on average at high, approximate at higher SNRs. Okay. Unfortunately, this big O is only a guide, and the constants in this big O are kind of critical in what we do. So how do we do? Well, we put together a very standard environment taken from one of the standard test environments that the competition uses. Everything in this whole setup is the same as they do. All we have done is change this soft demodulator. And the first thing we did was to try to ask ourselves, how much effort should we put into solving the semi-definite program? How accurately do we need to find the search parameters? And in doing this, we found that it was enough to solve it actually quite coarsely. Because we're actually only using it to guide a random search, we can actually solve this quite coarsely and still get good performance. In fact, it's actually a little bit more sophisticated than that. If we solve it too accurately, our performance actually measurably degrades. Okay, because there are approximations that are made in the setup that we have made, and if we solve this too accurately, then we are sort of conforming to those approximations and not looking at the bigger picture. But in terms of performance, what we have here is we have the bit error rate of a particular system against the signal-to-noise ratio, and the intuition from this is that as after we've done a couple of iterations, all of the methods that we're talking about provide what is essentially the same performance. As we change the signal-to-noise ratio, the probability of errors decreases rapidly, and the differences between these methods are fairly small. The important thing is their computational cost. And if we measure this computational cost in terms of the number of floating point operations per channel use, and this actually involves explicitly counting those, here is the method, the previous SDR, semi-definite relaxation method, which is of order of 10 to the minus 7. Here is this new method where we are only requiring one semi-definite relaxation per channel use. And here is the competition. So we're essentially getting the same performance, and it's costing us a little bit less on average. But this average notion of computational cost is hiding some things. And it's in fact a little bit more instructive to look at the PDF of the computational cost. And you'll see in the purple and the blue and the red are the PDFs of three semi-definite relaxation-based demodulators. And you notice that the actual computational cost is fairly tightly concentrated around the mean. In the black line is a sort of decision feedback style detector. Again, that has a deterministic computational cost. So that's why we just get a straight line here. So these things are fairly well concentrated. Okay. Fortunately, with the this single SDR, semi-definite relaxation per channel use, has a nice concentrated one that is at the smaller end. The interesting thing is this lump here, okay, which is a distribution of the computational cost of a tree search method. Okay, and this is a PDF rather than a CDF, so there's a lot of information that is not as easily visible here, but this has quite a long tail. And this is important because eventually you have to choose a processor to be able to implement this system. And if you choose a processor that, with the given symbol time, can do this in the right amount of time, then with the probability of the area that's under this curve, you will not be able to demodulate these things. And you will be inflicting errors on your system because of a lack of computational resources. So you won't just be fighting the wireless channel and the variations of the wireless channel when it comes to errors. You're fighting the fact that for some channels, the computational cost exceeds your ability to be able to solve the problem. Okay. In contrast, where these distributions are concentrated, then it's fairly easy to specify the capabilities of a processor that will be able to compute this in the required time with high probability. Okay, so the interim conclusion from this sort of very simple example is that the semi-definite relaxation perspective on this problem is quite different from the previous ones and the existing ones. It does give us a slightly superior trade-off between average performance and average computational cost. Probably not enough to get an industrial practitioner to leave what he is comfortable with to move to this horse, but it is nonetheless a little bit better. Certainly the tail of the computational complexity distribution is much lighter, okay, and that, again, it makes it easier to provision the processor. And the question is whether this is ready for prime time. So we're establishing that in a nice isolated academic example, this has some nice properties. And this example was chosen to highlight the ideas here rather than to highlight the application. So what have we not thought about? Okay, well, this is what we need to continue doing. if we're really going to get the best of what's promised out of these wireless communication systems, we can't afford just to send binary variables. We need to send messages with higher order, where there can be 16 possible values for the elements, or 64 possible values of the elements, rather than 4. And tree search approaches extend directly to this case, because now rather than having a binary tree, you have a higher order tree where the order is determined by the size of the symbol. All the principles extend directly. The other competitions also extend directly. Can semi-definite relaxation be extended? Well, the fundamental principle of semi-definite relaxation is it was set up for binary variables and quadratic programs. So it's actually not clear that that's true at all. So we might have wasted our time completely. Okay? However, there are ways to do this. And you can look at some really quite sophisticated ways to incorporate this signaling structure, okay, and get a very good high quality solution from your semi-definite relaxation. And I can't spell here, but this actually should be lose. What this does, though, is that we lose the cheap semi-definite program. The structure of these extra constraints here come in, and it means now we have to use general purpose semi-definite programming rather than the specialized one. So the computational cost of solving a semi-definite program balloons up to order 6 rather than order 3. And that immediately leaves us swamped by the competition. Okay? Fortunately, we can do something different. We can actually use a looser relaxation, okay, which enables us to retain the cheap semi-definite programming solution. Okay, and remember, we're only solving the semi-definite program to know whereabouts to randomly generate some candidates for a list. Okay, so maybe we can get away with this less accurate one because it allows us to retain the cubic cost algorithm rather than the power 6 algorithm. Okay, and that actually turns out to be the case. Maybe, too, I've been talking out of my hat about computational complexity the whole time. Have I measured that in the right way? Oh, sure, if I'm running it on my desktop, I think flops is a great idea. Okay? But most times I call on my phone, I've got an ASIC here that is running that demodulator. Okay? How well does what I have done map to an ASIC? Sorry, application-specific integrated circuit, for those of you. So a special chip designed to implement the algorithm in hardware. Well, tree searches are great in hardware because you just need to build one sort of fan-out node for the tree in the hardware, and you can just accelerate your algorithm on that directly. How well do interior point algorithms map to hardware? That question's still up in the air. Just to solving sets of linear equations. Okay? That's true. So maybe for current radios, the tree search has a real advantage. Okay? But eventually we're going to start building software radios that can implement multiple different standards and multiple different protocols all on one device. And the core of these things may turn out to be more like general purpose processors than ASICs. So maybe there is a time down the road where this differentiation will be less important. Okay? What happens in practice? We sort of done this all assuming that we know the channel. Assuming you know the environment that we are communicating through. In practice, we have to reserve some of the time that would be used for data communication to learn about the environment. So we can't spend all our time learning about the environment because we want to communicate at some point in time. So what will happen to these algorithms when we actually don't know the channel exactly? Okay, how sensitive is each one of them? Okay, are there opportunities to build these things? Okay. I'm also conscious of the time here. One of the big achievements of what we did here was to find ways to slowly chip away at the computational cost so that we only have to compute one semi-definite program each time we send data across the channel. Unfortunately, when we really operate one of these things in practice, we often assume this channel is constant over a period of time. And the competition can exploit, the competing algorithms can exploit this fact and do some generic pre-processing that exploits the structure of that channel. By doing things in this semi-definite programming way, it's not immediately obvious that we can do that. Okay? So maybe we need to think about some kind of warm starting technique for some of these semi-definite programs in order to be able to exploit the information of this channel remaining constant to try and help us solve these problems faster. Okay, and in the end, I just want to say this quickly, none of the proposed standards involve communicating over a nice narrowband memoryless channel. Okay, your old cell phones do. New cell phones and proposals will not do that. They will exploit a much wider band, and they will split up that band into a bunch of narrow channels. So you will communicate simultaneously not just over multiple antennas, but also over multiple frequencies. Okay. So not only do we don't have to solve the problems that we've talked about here on one frequency, we may have to solve them on 64 or even 256 frequencies. So this is now, massive multiplier on our computational costs. Okay? But the channels on these neighboring frequencies are going to be correlated. And to what extent can we amortize the computational effort over those neighboring frequencies as well as over time? Again, this is an ongoing issue for all of the methods. I don't know that there is a really good solution to this one for anybody. But this is another great opportunity for using insight into warm starting semi-definite programs that may enable us to make some progress here. So in an idealized setting, this semi-definite relaxation approach is a significantly different perspective on the problem from those that are existing. And in a plain vanilla way, we were unable to construct a competitive algorithm. But by thinking carefully about the internals of the algorithm, we were actually able to make something competitive and to retain some of the nice computational properties. There's still much to be done before I can stand up in front of you and say, yes, this is the technique of choice. There are significant other, this is not the first technique on the market in terms of trying to exploit these things. But it does have significantly different properties from those that are out there. Okay? The advantage for us is that when you are identifying communications, when communication standards are being decided, it's typically the transmitter structure that is specified in the standard. And all that is specified in the standard on the receiver is that you have to be able to meet a particular performance level on a particular channel model and then apart from that, it's up to you. So if we were really trying to compete on transmission structure here, we'd have to fight standardization battles to be able to get somebody interested in building something here. Because we are working on the receiver structure, the field is a little bit more open there, and as are the possibilities. So there are opportunities on the table here. There is still a lot of work to be done, but by applying sort of semi-definite relaxation in its plain vanilla form, we're unable to be successful. We're unable to be competitive. Now we know how to be competitive. The question is whether or not we can win. And with that, I think I've taken up more than enough time. Thank you.